Churches, victims, and Christians both drinking blood. And they'll pray for the destruction of all hatred, more often just those with hate for us. 'Cause it hurts when you discover one's worse and one's better to suffer or cause others to. And you can live by your conscience. Now guilt is a concept you know.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Yasmin El-Rashidi, who is the author of the e-book The Battle for Egypt. She is a frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books and is a former Middle East correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. She joins us from Cairo. Welcome to Background Briefing, Yasmin El-Rashidi.
Thank you, Ian.
And tell me about what happened on Sunday night with 24 Coptic Christians killed, more than 270 wounded, according to the Egyptian health ministry, and pretty much the blame is being laid at the feet of the head of the military council, Field Marshal Hussein Tantawi, who's in charge of, basically in charge of Egypt.
Yes, Ian. Well, I mean, to start with, I think that the figure of 24, they're not all cops, which I think just needs to be clarified. And what happened is, some days ago, there was a church that had been bombed in burned in Aswan in Upper Egypt, and the Copts had organized a marching protest, sort of calling for protection. That started yesterday afternoon and marched through downtown and was approaching the television building when it was attacked by thugs. And it was at that point that suddenly the situation exploded, escalated, and turned into the chaos that, you know, I'm sure you've been seeing on TV. And it was a combination of factors. You know, I think it was instigated by thugs, who infiltrated and penetrated that protest. The army then began shooting in the air, to try and disperse and warn people. And then it seemed that sort of panic very quickly escalated. Armored vehicles driven by obviously soldiers, began sort of zooming up and down the streets, kind of pushing through protesters, trampling over some, killing them. There was gunfire. Some of it was from the army. Some of it, I believe, was from outside thugs. And then sort of it very quickly spiraled. The cars were set on fire. People began beating one another. It turned into a really, really ugly incident, instigated by thugs, escalated by the army, and then further escalated by, I think, mobs. You know, it was very much that mob mentality from what I saw.
And Yasmin El-Rashidi, I understand also that state television, their anchors urged honorable citizens to head down and help the soldiers defend themselves. So that's further instigation, it would seem.
The state TV played a critical and criminal role last night. They said that Coptic protesters with guns had shot at their soldiers, and indeed they called on people to go down and protect their soldiers from those Coptic protesters, armed Coptic protesters. That obviously didn't help. And, you know, by the end of the evening, Ian, there were young men who were seeking out the Copts and saying that they would kill any Copts that they could get their hands on. And I watched as dozens of young Copts, men and women, were beaten. They were brutally assaulted by these mobs. And at one point, I saw a young man and a young woman trying to come out of the protest and go home. They were identified as cops, and a group of about 15 young men with sticks went in on them, beat them up, and one of them emerged with blood all over his hands, waving his hands in the air, boasting the fact that he had Coptic blood on his hands. So it was, you know, it was, I do question if that same young man would have done that yesterday, sorry, the day before or even before that. You know, we don't have that culture of this kind of violence between Copts and Muslims. There has been incidents, but not to that level. We've never seen that kind of brutality. And I think it was partly state TV. I think it was partly this mob mentality. It was a combination of factors.
Well, Yasmin El-Rashidi, again, author of the e-book, The Battle for Egypt, frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books. She's joining us from Cairo. We're talking about the demonstrations in Cairo on Sunday night that turned violent. And they, of course, were organized to protest the recent burning of a church by the Salafists, I take it. And one of the complaints that the Copts have is the lackadaisical response of the ruling military junta to these fairly frequent anti-Christian attacks. And, of course, the Copts are 10% of the population of Egypt, but they don't seem to have a lot of political representation. Is that correct?
They don't. I mean, it's true. They are a minority. They're about 10 to 15% of the population of 82 million. There have been prominent Copts over the years who've had important positions in government, but for the most part, they are extremely underrepresented, and that's, you know, sort of across the spectrums of government and business. And they have, you know, they've actively asked for support over the months, especially since Mubarak stepped down, and they haven't really got it. And I think the military council has made promises that it hasn't delivered on. The cabinet has made promises that it hasn't delivered on demands that they've put forward. And, you know, yet again, yesterday, it's true, there are huge questions as to why the army did not try to control the situation in a different way. I have information from a very informed source that what happened with those armored vehicles running up and sort of zooming up and down the streets and, you know, stampeding, killing these protesters, they hadn't been given instructions to do so. The soldiers didn't know how to react. They hadn't been given instructions, and it sounded like it was panic. However, why didn't the army try to contain the situation? You know, why didn't it try and disperse some of the people who kept coming in? There were clearly thugs coming in as the hours unfolded into the night. And then again today, I went downtown and there was the gathering of Muslims chanting Islamia, Islamia, which means an Islamic State, we want an Islamic State. Why did the army allow those to gather again today? So there are very huge questions about why the army isn't containing things. You know, we understand that they must be capable. We understand that it's difficult to contain a mob, but they must have techniques. And they've, you know, it's not the first time that this has escalated. A few weeks ago, it was the Israeli embassy. It was a very similar kind of energy, a similar kind of escalation. And again, the army allowed it to unfold into what it did.
So what are we to surmise from this, Yasmin El-Rashidi, where you have thugs provoking the kind of violence that the military is responsible for, and apparently you're suggesting there's a lack of discipline there, but there seems to be a motive on the part of some of the political players, whether it's opportunism or not. Now, what's interesting is that the Muslim Brotherhood's SML Arian condemned the violence. So even though what provoked these demonstrations were burnings of churches by ultra-conservative Muslims, then you have the element of the thugs. So who's orchestrating the thugs, given the response of the Muslim Brotherhood? What do you make of that?
I think, Ian, that the thugs are in some way linked to the former regime, not specifically paid by, you know, former officials, but loyalists to that regime. The former state security apparatus was known to include tens of thousands of thugs, and they are still out in the country, and I think their loyalties still lie with that regime. And so when a protest of 10,000 or more takes to the streets, you know, chanting, I think the attack is an opportunity to, and it's a statement against the revolution and against the revolutionaries. And it is the opportunity to create the kind of disorder and chaos that I believe the former regime, the corrupt elements of the former regime, are delighted to witness. You know, let's not forget that Mubarak warned that if he left, there would be chaos. And this is the chaos that we are seeing. The Muslim Brotherhood, I don't believe, has any involvement in such things. They're much too savvy for this. But in a sense, they are manipulating a situation by calling for quicker elections and using that as, you know, using this to say that the solution is elections. And they are in a very strong position. They are the most organized political party and faction. They are confident that they're going to win a sizable chunk or majority of the parliamentary seats. And for them, this all sort of aids their cause. As everyone else is fighting in the streets and arguing, they are still very, very actively preparing for elections, campaigning, and lobbying support.
So the extent to which then the thugs, who are the leftovers from the Mubarak regime, are trying to provoke trouble to keep the old guard in power in the form of the military junta, who are pretty much the vestiges of Mubarak, although they promised to step out of the way, they're certainly taking their time. So the Muslim Brotherhood, does it recognize the cynicism of the military regime, or is it just focused on it winning the next election?
I think the Muslim Brotherhood, they're playing a very, very careful game in that they are making sure that they don't ruffle the feathers of the military, because they have an understanding that they could be crushed as they were under the former regime. So they're walking a very, very fine and careful line, sort of showing enough support with the military when necessary, being pretty consistent in their statement of what they hope to achieve and moving forward to elections, but being very careful about which protests they go down and join and which they boycott. And I think that's where you really see where the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood lies.
Well, clearly then, Yasmin El-Rashidi, does that mean that the liberals, who in many ways started the revolution, and the Copts are going to be shut out? The Brotherhood is keeping its relationships with the military in order to end up with more power, and that the military obviously don't support the Copts, and they certainly don't support the liberals. So does that mean that the next government, in effect, after these elections, will be some combination of conservative military elements and Muslim Brotherhood?
I think there'll be a large chunk of Islamists, not just Muslim Brotherhood, but Islamist representation. I think there will be then a real fragmentation, between different forces. I think that former regime elements will definitely have a chunk of the seats. And then I think what will happen is there will be enough of a fragmented parliament that will never in many ways reach a solution on anything. I think that what we're seeing right now in the political landscape is a discourse that's not reaching any conclusions or any answers. Nobody's able to agree because nobody is willing to compromise. And I think that we're going to see that duplicated in the parliament to come. And I think that's where the military gains its control, by having a parliament that in many ways never reaches conclusions and can't really come to unanimous votes on things. I think, will then be controlling the country in another way.
So does if the Liberal bloc were more cohesive, what kind of numbers do you think they can deliver? I mean, like all people on the left, they tend to be fragmented, whereas people on the right, and particularly religious people tend to be in lockstep. Is that a factor here?
I feel that, in 2005 we had a parliament that was largely National Democratic Party, which was the ruling party. Then there was a huge chunk of Muslim Brothers. They had 88 seats. And then there were liberals, different kinds of factions of liberals, but again, a minority. I think what we're going to see this time is similar percentage divisions, but the majority will be the Islamists. I think that, again, the former ruling regime elements and the liberals will take, you know, again, two chunks. The liberals, they could take between 30-35%, but I don't think it would be a unified bloc. I think there would be a lot of division between them.
So just in closing then, Yasmin El-Rashidi, what are the fate of the 10% or 10-plus percent of Egyptians who are Coptic Christians? Clearly, the specter of what happened in Iraq looms large, in as much as the Iraqi Christians have all but left that country. You know, ironically, of course, the Christians in Syria are supporting the brutal regime of Bashar al-Assad because they're afraid of a Sunni Muslim majority. Is there any? Where are they going to go? What kind of? They must be feeling paranoid after what happened on Sunday night.
Absolutely, Ian. Personally, I was petrified being out in the street, and I was made to feel extremely uncomfortable because I don't cover my hair. So the assumption was that I was a Copt. And today, again, I attended Mass at the cathedral where the Copts were, and everyone was uncomfortable. There was a sense of, you know, this faith could be attacked at any moment. I think, you know, the faith is the Copts, I think a lot of them will choose, if they're able, to leave the country. You know, the wealthy ones, I think many of them have already left. Those who can immigrate and seek asylum will. I think there will be more incidents of violence, perhaps not as large as what we witnessed last night, but definitely scattered incidents of violence. But the one thing that, you know, I think is coming out of this is the liberal Muslims are outraged too. A couple of hours ago, I was with a young Islamist, a Muslim brother member, and he was in tears. He said, you know, I cannot believe the slaughterhouse that this has become. I cannot believe that human lives are being lost in this way, that they're being butchered. And so the Muslim community, I think, will come together and try and protect the Copts and try and stand with them in solidarity. Is this enough? No. You know, will it get worse? I think that we are moving towards a more fragmented and definitely a more conservative Egypt. And I don't really think there is a solution right now. I feel there's such a state of disorder and such a lack of control that it will take a really long time for things to stabilize again.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here, Yasmin El-Rashidi.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Yasmin El-Rashidi, who's the author of the e-book, The Battle for Egypt. She's a frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books and is a former Middle East correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. She joined us from Cairo. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about a very important conference that took place in Washington last week involving a lot of White House insiders and former heavy hitters inside the Beltway. روحي فداك واسمي شهيدك دمي بيجري في دمي وريدك صوت الحر يا مصر نشيدك انا انفاسك انا تنهيدك انا ربك ربط الجماهير صوتك في ميدان التحرير امل الصوت